Hey, everybody. This is Jersey Drozd of ComicsAreGreat.com, and obviously I am not in the Ann Arbor District Library Netcast studios. I'm in my studio. I'm at home today. I'm taking an episode off from doing the live shows as I get ready for the Small Press Expo in Bethesda, Maryland, September 15th and 16th, spexpo.com. Hope to see some of you guys there. So in lieu of doing a live episode, technical director Matt Dubay put together the video that was recorded at the Kids Read Comics Festival July 7th and 8th, 2012 at the Ann Arbor District Library. We did a full-on live studio audience episode there that's never been seen before, and we got great guests like Raina Telgemeier, Dave Roman, Rob Stenzinger, Joe Fu, and Sharon Iverson, and even some live audience participation on the show. So that's coming up for the next hour will be that episode, and I hope you guys enjoy it. It's Comics Are Great, the visual storytelling show, recorded live every other Wednesday at the Ann Arbor District Library in lovely downtown Ann Arbor, Michigan, right on the corner of 5th and William. Comics.aadl.org. Who here, this is the first episode in front of a live studio audience. Can I get a round of applause, please, so we can catch it on the audio? See how many people were here.
Thousands.
My name is Jersey Drozd, cartoonist and teaching artist, and I want to ask the live audience, before I introduce our guests, how many here were aware that the library was doing a weekly podcast? A few. Oh, cool. Well, then this is an outreach moment where we let you guys know that every other Wednesday for the last year now, we have been recording and broadcasting a live edition of this, what I like to call the Dick Cavett Show for cartoonists, where we have guests, local guests come in, and we have Skype guests. So I've had Joe Fu in studio before, Rob and Dave, who we'll introduce in just a second, that they usually appear via Skype. And we just have a roundtable discussion about something to do with comic storytelling and creativity, visual storytelling, visual art, and so on. And usually we have a lot of fun. So now I will introduce the guests as we get into our, let's break into our topic of discussion today. First I want to introduce, and I'll pull up on the screen here, it's Yay Time, let's go, because it is Yay Time, because Yay Time himself, Dave Roman, is here. Dave Roman of YayTime.com, Yay Time on Twitter, Astronaut Academy, Teen Boat, TeenBoatComics.com. Thanks for being here, Dave.
Which camera should I be looking at?
I'm not sure which camera you should be looking at, actually. I think that's the one over there that's going to be on you. But so Dave, this is your third Kids Read Comics. We should say that.
I think so.
That we're all here for Kids Read Comics 2012. So.
Yeah, but how long has this been going on?
This is our fourth year doing it.
Yeah, so I missed the first one.
Well, that's okay. You're here for the most important one, this one, 2012.
That's right.
But Dave, you hail all the way from...
The year we made contact.
Yeah, that is the year we made contact. But you hail from New York. You're here from Queens, New York.
Yes, Astoria, Queens, New York.
Oh. Cool. Yes. I didn't know. I thought Queens itself would... ignorance of New York.
Queens has multiple parts.
Oh. Okay, well, thank you for being here, Dave. We'll talk more in a second. Then I want to introduce Mr. Rob Stenzinger of interactive-storyteller.com and leanintoart.com. Welcome, Rob.
Thank you. Thank you, Jersey.
And Rob hails from Minnesota.
Yeah, don't you know?
Minneapolis, Minnesota. And you just did a panel for us. Well, we'll talk more about what workshops you guys are doing today too in a second. But yeah, Rob's got a video game workshop coming. So Rob is a cartoonist and a teaching artist and a game designer, UI designer, UX designer. The man does just about everything. And then we have of Desmond'sComic.com, Mr. Joe Fu, the man with the megaphone.
You're too kind.
Joe Fu is you are a cartoonist and an art teacher.
I am. I am a art instructor at College for Creative Studies in Detroit, locally here in Michigan. I teach a whole bunch of whiny college students.
I take it you're tenured, if you're able to say that.
No. So if anyone needs an art instructor out there, I'm available.
And I'll complain about you later. No. Joe's a great guy, and he's been a guest on Comics Are Great before, and also he's leading a bunch of workshops for us here at Kids Read Comics this weekend. So then I have to turn to the Don of the comic scene here in Ann Arbor. She always gets angry at me when I say this, but she has been instrumental in developing a lot of the comic scene that's been happening here in the Ann Arbor area. It's Sharon Iverson of the Ann Arbor District Library, teen librarian of AADL.org. Welcome, Sharon.
Woo!
So I want to start with this episode by talking about, you know, we're here for Kids Read Comics 2012, which is being hosted by the Ann Arbor District Library. We took over the whole building this weekend, and I'm wondering if we could start with sharing some of our reactions, experiences, anecdotes from what's happened so far on the first day of the event. Has anything interesting happened to you on the floor of KRC this weekend? And then we will open the floor for questions, too, to talk more about, like, podcasting, comics, comics advocacy, and so on. But I want to start first with the KRC stuff. So anybody want to kick it off, Sharon?
Sure. This morning I was in the first computer lab session when it was cooler. Now it's warm, but it was Krishna, and I do not know how to say Krishna's...
Sadasivam of PCWeenies.com.
PCWeenies.com, who did a fantastic workshop on the whole idea that in learning to draw, if you take a flour sack, you can make just about any kind, design any kind of character that you can imagine. And there was one point during the session that I watched him drawing a character, full character face with the flour sack, and I saw in the moments in which he was drawing it, I saw Casper the Ghost, and then it changed to Tweety Bird before it ended up finally as the character, and I went, oh my gosh, look at, you know, and he said, you know, it played into his hand because of course you can, with the flour sack shape, you can do all this stuff. And so that was quite fun to watch. That everybody, people didn't have questions. They were like drawing like mad with Krishna. It was really fun to see.
That's pretty cool. I want to hear from our art educators on the panel about this idea of how you see the world differently once you start. Because, like, one of the things you do in art education is you try to find a very simple way, a simple metaphor for what we do on paper, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's Krishna's angle was, like, if you just think of the torso as a flour sack, it's pretty easy to twist that around in your mind and then build the body off of that. Joe or Rob, I'm wondering if either of you guys can report to this idea of, like, once you learn a simple approach like that, does it change the way you see the world? Like, are you seeing flower sacks everywhere?
Well, I'll tell you this. Here's my highlight of KRC 2012. Thinking of a new workshop to do tomorrow because Krishna stole mine. Because that is totally what I teach. Anytime in animation, you do want that torso to be a flower sack. I call it like a feather pillow to make it a little more something that people or kids understand, because kids love feather pillows.
You mean flower sacks aren't ubiquitous in our society anymore?
Kids, do you hang around with a lot of flower sacks out there?
It's sort of like if you think of a rotary telephone, that's a great metaphor for drawing
yes.
a human figure.
No. Yes, or a Sony Walkman.
Yeah.
As an art instructor, one of the hardest things to convince the student is that everything's a really simple shape, and you don't start out with detail, you don't start out with trying to put every line in an eyeball and on your first draw, on your first initial drawing, that there's a gesture involved and a simplification that's involved, and you build on top of that. And if you simplify first, and if you use that flower sack or rotary phone or whatever, You will hold life. Your figures, your characters, everything will be more lifelike, more exciting, more animated. Once you start adding details on, you start making them a little too stiff. We actually talked about this when I was a guest on the show, where you had that terrible Todd McFarlane impression. That you did.
Thanks for bringing that part up. That's the thing I want people to walk away with after listening to that episode, is my bad McFarlane impersonation.
Hopefully we'll hear it before the end of
I'm not going to bite that bait.
We're going to hear it.
But yeah, that's where we can go back to the archives. If you go to comicsaregreat.com and search for Joe Fu.
And I believe it was also the greatest Comics Are Great show ever.
It might have been.
That's what I heard.
I can look it up right now while we talk about this, but... but yeah, okay, so that also models what we do on the show all the time, is we pitch a question, somebody answers the question, then we follow up on the question and discuss it as a group.
And then we make fun of Jersey.
and sometimes people give me a really hard time, because I take it with a smile. I think that's why I make it too easy. Anybody else have any reactions, responses, or anecdotes from Kids Read Comics 2012 so far?
Let's see. In general, and actually specifically, I had the honor of
helping moderate the Making Video Games panel, which was actually in this room roughly an hour ago. And there was a question about, what about the working in the game industry was surprising to you? So not to get meta, but like, so interesting and surprising to me about today was just then seeing the, you know, some back and forth between the audience and the artists themselves as they were talking through what was surprising to them in making video games compared to what they expected when they started. Because I think that is a... I'm back, you know, from coming last year, and one of the things that I really enjoyed is seeing that exchange happen where you have people who have been practicing art for a while and sharing those kinds of, you know, their observations about that and responding to curiosities from the folks that come up and ask or even look inquisitive. And anyway, that is, so it's somewhat continuing that thing that as far as why I came back, and also neat to see it because it's just really cool when it pops up, the exchange of practiced people getting delighted and surprised when they're reflecting on what they've been doing for a while, and the back and forth between people who are like, hey, I want to do that.
You know, we live in a time where it's never been easier to find out how to do something that you want to do, right? You go to YouTube, you say, my sink broke a while back, and I was tweeting about being covered in water and tucked underneath of my kitchen sink and crying and screaming. And so I went to YouTube, and how do you fix a sink? And there's a video that walks you through it. Anything you want to know, you have access to this information. But that doesn't fix the spontaneity of personal interaction, right? And having somebody come up with even like a wondering that they don't even have the question fully formed yet. You know, I think that's another really important part of this thing, that bringing people into a physical locality, like the same, I mean, in the case you're talking about, the video game panel, we had Skype guests, but you were there moderating, you were there on behalf of the people to bring that spontaneity to it, right? And that causes discovery of really what they call in education, Sharon backed me up on this, the teachable moment, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That's a educators love to use that term. So Dave, anything that you wanted to, you're smiling.
Yeah. Well, the thing I was most impressed by is that John, the artist of Vordak the Incomprehensible, is wearing a full Vordak costume, and he's a very tall individual. So you can sort of see him towering over all the children. but also that it's 100 degrees and he's like committed to wearing this like really elaborate villain costume.
Yeah, yeah.
That's definitely, I want to give him a lot of money for doing that for
Have you guys seen Vordak the Incomprehensible downstairs? Yeah, that's impressive.
Which is it's a really great middle grade series, and I did not realize that he actually dressed up as the character, and that's really awesome.
It's some excellent cosplay. I mean, it's a good looking
costume.
Yeah,
it's beyond cosplay. I think my favorite thing about Kids Read Comics in general and specifically this year as well is that I love that when I meet these kids that a lot of them are cartoonists already.
Yeah.
And this is something you guys have talked about a lot, that, you know, the line between the people behind the table and on the other side is just, you've got a table or I don't. And actually a lot of kids who have come to previous shows now have tables and are selling their own comics. So it's really great to meet kids and then, see their work and get to be peers with these kids. Envious of these kids.
Or feel threatened.
Far ahead of, where we are. They've got years to just improve and get better and all the technology at their fingertips. And
well, you guys met Isabella this morning at the Comics Quickfire event that you led and I just participated in, and the way I describe her is, I'm going to be working for her someday because, this kid is so brilliant, and, with the access to information that she has now, for sure. So, well, cool. We were just joined by Raina Telgemeier of GoRaina.com. I think that's incredible. Thank you.
It looked like Sharon morphed into her.
she's one of those Odo changelings from Deep Space Nine. But Raina, man, what a hero. You just came here from another panel. You were just, or another workshop. You just came from your workshop at 826 Michigan. How'd that go?
It was great. The workshop was How to Turn Your Life into a Comic. And so we talked about taking a moment from your own life, in this case, the most disgusting, horrifying moment from your life, and turning it into a short one-page comic. So we had a lot of really, really gross stories that we shared. It was awesome.
Can you share one of the grosser ones? That's the G-rated?
Well, the one that I chose to... What I'll do is I'll do an example of one person's story so that everybody sees my process. And I chose a kid who had tasted Vegemite when he was at camp. And so he wanted to talk about how gross Vegemite was. So that's what we did.
Oh, cool.
Vegemite is gross. I've never tried it, but according to the comic, it's disgusting and tastes like death.
Wow. Because see, I've heard it just tastes really yeasty, and I love yeasty food, so I'm eager to try it out. Actually, that sounds like a challenge now.
Is that a New Zealand thing or is that a Australian thing? Don't we have an Australian cartoonist?
We do have an Australian cartoonist here. He assures me that Marmite is quite distinct from Vegemite, so I have to go find Marmite. I can find here, but Vegemite's a little harder to come by. Well, cool. Well, thanks for being part of this, Raina. What I want to do, and we've shared some stories from the show, I want to open it up. If anybody has any questions that they want to throw at the panel, you can feel free. I'm not just going to put you guys on the spot and say, give me a question, because we can keep going. I just want to let you know that now we're entering the part of the show where if you guys have a question, you can raise your hand, and we'll be glad to put you on. Oh, there we go. And you can step up to the mic. Matt's coming. Matt Dubay, the technical director of Comics for Great, everybody. Of the AADL Netcast studio. He jumped out to say, you can step right up to this mic, yes, and you can ask a question of the panel. We've got a lot of expertise.
Come to the hot seat.
Yeah, the hot seat. Or like they do in those real estate ads, it's like where they put like five realtors together and they're like, 270 years of experience combined. You know what I mean? I don't know how many years of experience we got combined here, but probably quite a few. So if you guys feel free to step up if you want to. So, okay. With that, I will say... talking about comics and advocacy and doing workshops, what else are you guys doing this weekend that you might want to tell people about right now? Raina, you've got other stuff coming up this weekend.
I'm freezing trying to think of what that would be.
Oh, I've got your website up right here. We can just pull this up on the screen. How about this, everybody? Okay, so...
We're doing a reading tomorrow.
That's right. So here at the Ann Arbor District Library, the Interactive Graphic Novel Theater. What
that's
is
the
that?
One. That's something Dave and I have been doing together for quite a while, where we will project a scene from our comic up on a screen. We'll do it panel by panel, and we'll have audience members read the voices of the characters. So usually I'll work with one or two kids and have them read voices of various characters from my comic. And I'll add sound effects, and it's super fun. Talking about it doesn't do it any justice. You kind of just have to see it.
Well, I'm curious. I wonder if we can talk a little bit about why you have people actually read them aloud. What does that achieve?
Comics are a really intimate medium. I think that when the artist is making a comic, it's really all about them sitting by themselves in a room with their paper, and they're telling a story. And then when the reader reads the story, they're also having an intimate experience. So it's sort of a one-to-one relationship, but it's kind of hard to share comics with a group the way it is easy to share a story with a group with no pictures, or a movie, which you can also project a movie onto a screen and everybody can collectively watch it. But with a comic, it's hard to do that. So we like to bring the comic to the screen. And because comics are on paper, they don't have any sounds or voices, so we like to get people involved, because interaction it sort of makes them feel like they're a part of the experience in a whole other way.
Yeah, and the fun part is that if kids have already read the book, you're sort of seeing a new interpretation of it. Like maybe they've read, the scene a million times, but now they're seeing someone else bring their sort of perspective to it, and I think that adds a new excitement to it and gives everybody something. You're all sharing an experience.
We were at the American Library Association conference last week, and I watched you run through a very quick version of this very workshop for the librarians, and you had some librarians do a reading of your work, and it was amazing to me how all they had to do was just look at Marion Mellon-Belli just look at a picture of her, and they understood the character instantly, and they were reading it in this very bratty, very defiant voice, and you didn't have to coach them on that. So, like, that spoke to me about how the immediacy of comics can be expressed to a group, right, by letting them do a live reading. Like,
well, and as an author, it's the biggest thrill that every single time someone brings a little bit something to it, and I've had boys do the character and get, like, really into this, like, you know, like, you know, like an 8-year-old boy doing their, like, Valley Girl voice, or, you know, their, like, bratty mean girl snot voice, is fun, you know.
Yeah.
And some girls, you know, are like, oh yeah, you know, I'm gonna get my, you know, I'm getting revenge on, you know, I'm doing an impression of this girl in my class or something.
So we have somebody who stepped up to the hot seat.
Yay.
We have a courageous soul in the room. I think you deserve a round of applause. Before you even ask the question. Could you say your name, not your last name, and where you came from?
Okay, my name is Jenna Axujo from north of Chicago.
And you have a Twitter handle, too.
I do. I'm at MentorText.
At MentorText on the Twitter. Mm-hmm. So thanks for coming.
Sure.
What do you got for the panel?
Okay, well, I'm a teacher, but I'm also a parent. My son is 5 years old. And anytime I walk into a comic store, I feel stuck because I'm so overwhelmed by everything and what's out there. I've read graphic novels, obviously, and I talk to my students about that. But what would you recommend for someone who's younger and trying to help them find something for themselves?
Well, there's a whole line of graphic novels for very early readers called Toon Books. The Toon Book series are published by Art Spiegelman and his wife Françoise Moulet, and they are designed and vetted to be perfect for beginning readers. So there's one called Benny and Penny, and it's actually a series, and it's about two little mice. I think they're siblings, right? And they're super cute, and the language is very straightforward. It's designed for 5-year-olds to read and learn to read with. And short.
There's actually another company that has started publishing in that almost the exact same format. There was sort of like this bridge between easy readers and comic books called Balloon Toons. Mm-hmm. And I think they're putting out books like even faster than the Toon books.
They have one called Zoe and Robot. And it's about a girl named Zoe and her robot. And the guys with the book is that robots do not know how to pretend, so she has to teach the robot how to pretend.
Yeah. Oh, there it is.
That sounds fun.
So Balloon Toon, Zoe and Robot, Let's Pretend. And then the other recommendation that you had was, oh, I lost where it is.
Benny and Penny.
Benny and Penny. I will look that up right now.
Yeah, and there's great websites, like School Library Journal has their great Comics for Kids blog. That they're always reviewing great books. And Scott Robbins, who blogs for them, just co-wrote a book called A Parent's Guide to... What? Raina knows the title of it. What's it called?
I think it's called A Parent's Guide to the Best Kids Comics.
Yeah. Okay.
Kids with an apostrophe.
And I think, as Jersey has described it, it's like the Sears catalog of great graphic novels for kids, because they've got full-color pictures from all the books, and you can just sort of go through. And they have, like, all the categories and age ranges and everything you'd want to know. There's Scott.
I pulled him up on Goodreads by accident instead of actually. Yeah. There's his book, A Parent's Guide to the Best Kids Comics, Choosing Titles Your Children Will Love.
Yeah, I think that this book is going to, like, make a lot of people happy, because it really... not only is it a great resource, but it's actually a really fun book in and of itself, because you can actually look through all the pages of the samples and get a taste of the comics, rather than hearing somebody just sort of describe it. You get to really get a feel for every book and sort of decide, is this for me or is this for my kid?
There's also a really great series called Owly, which is a silent graphic novel, but the characters speak in emoticons and things like expression, you know, they speak in smiley faces and exclamation points and question marks, and it's a great sort of inference tool. Great for people that are just starting to read also.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Joe, did you have anything to add? I saw you nodding emphatically.
I disagree with everything. Well, I'll tell you what. My two biggest inspirations as far as comics to buy were Jeff Smith's Bone series, which is collected now into, like, this gigantic graphic novel. And I know he was somewhat inspired by Uncle Scrooge comics and Donald Duck comics. And I know Boom Comics reprinted a lot of the older Uncle Scrooge stuff, and even the Don Rosa, who was an artist writer, to take it over and really kind of bring DuckTales into bring it to a new generation. And those comics, you're like, Donald Duck, okay, whatever. It's just a silly cartoon duck. But, like, the stories that they wove and those books were phenomenal. In fact, there's a lot of urban legend out there that they've actually inspired the Indiana Jones movies. There are some concepts that Karl Barks came up with that, like, later, like, scientists were like, hey, we could do that. Like, there was one where Donald Duck raised a sunken ship. I don't know the proper term, but he raised a sunken ship by filling it with ping pong balls. And then, like, 10 years later, they were like, hey, let's try that. And it worked. And it was just a concept in a funny book. So there's just a lot of great adventure stories where you wouldn't think in the Disney series. And Bone is, like, one of the greatest epic, I think, comics of all time. So those are my two recommendations.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you, Jen.
We should just say real quick that Raina and I grew up reading comic strips, like Calvin and Hobbes and Garfield and Peanuts and all that stuff. You know, and what's great about those is that they're really short little strips, so kids can sort of read them in pieces and sort of, you know, build their confidence in reading rather than seeing a whole story that may be intimidating. And then, you know, joke every page.
So you're not saying that you should give them the complete Bone collection, that gigantic, like, 1,000-page thing, just drop it.
Yeah, you may not want to, like, drop that on, like, on a 5-year-old.
It's good to kill spiders.
But I want to give credit to Jen Vincent of Mentor Text on the Twitters. So thank you, Jen.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jen.
Thank you.
Anybody else want to step up to the hot seat, or we can keep going with some of these things?
Seat's gonna get cold.
Yeah. So I had a whole bunch of things pulled up that I wanted to bring up. So there we go. So I wanted to. We already talked about your guys' workshops. I want to talk about Joe. You're doing one tomorrow that Krishna already did.
Yeah, stole my idea. Now I'm gonna do a whole different one. No, I'm not.
Come on.
I'm just gonna expand upon that idea of creating characters based on simplified shapes. And like I said before, that's where all the life kind of comes into the character. So we're going to just kind of draw goofy shapes and see what is made, what comes out of those goofy shapes, like if we make faces. Most of my characters, I base them roughly on shapes. Like someone will have a square head, or someone will have an upside-down triangle, or anything like that, a round head. And I try to keep those shapes intact as I develop the whole character, just to give it the character some personality, a little variety. I know there's a couple of sites out there that joke about finding, I know Jim Lee's a big one, where they find like all his female characters are exactly the same, only with different hair, and they have the exact same face. So I took that to heart and try to give my characters a lot of variety. So we'll be making some fun characters out of crazy faces. Or out of crazy shapes, making some crazy faces out of crazy shapes. And yeah, and then I'm also calling people out with my good old megaphone in the middle of Artist Alley, because one thing about Kids Read Comics that's really cool is there are a lot of kids there, and they all like comics, and a lot of people come and they want to draw. A lot of kids come and they want to draw. And
can I say one of my favorite moments from this weekend? I shared a picture on Instagram about this. You and Joshua Buchanan set up an impromptu workshop
at that empty fest. We just did that.
Yeah, you just did that a little while ago. And I grabbed a photo of it because there you were. Like, some kids just stopped by and they wanted to draw.
Yeah.
And so you're like, okay, let's draw together.
I just have a big pad of paper, and if someone walks by and they're like, yeah, I like drawing, I'm like, hey, let's draw something. And I get on the megaphone, I call someone over. It just so happened Josh was not doing much at the time, so he came over and we actually drew some Scratch 9 cats and
Rob Worley's.
Rob Worley's cheap plug for Rob Worley. I'm working on. I did a story for Scratch 9 9 Lives, by the way. But yeah, we drew some cats, and Jesse Hughes kind of got involved in the situation earlier, and we drew. What did we draw? I think we drew hearts. there were girls. We drew some hearts, and yeah, we've been having fun. So throughout the day, for the rest of the day today and through tomorrow, I'm just going to just stop by my table. If you want to draw something, we'll all, I'll find somebody, maybe Jersey Box by. I'll grab him. He's fast, though. He doesn't
slippery.
Stop for me.
I'm slimy from the sweat being outside.
We're all sweaty. Inside, too.
For those who are listening to this way after the fact, it's, what, 102 degrees outside today? And, yeah, and then plus we crammed 60 artists in a very small space, so it's very warm in this building today.
There are skylights in that room.
Oh, that's right. I mean, it's nice having the natural sunlight in a comic convention. That is awesome. But on the other hand, at times, it reminds me of MoCA 2005 when I went, and I was bathed in natural sunlight. But, boy, oh, boy, was it hot in there. So hot. Anybody else have any questions, thoughts, wonderings for the panel? Eden? No? Okay. She just came to watch.
She's off the clock.
Off the clock? There's no such thing. For...
Well, she works with Small Press Expo.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But okay. Well, we got Caleb at the mic. Caleb is here, another blender artist, cartoonist, scientist, and time traveler.
I don't know if you've previously discussed on any panel Team Cul-de-sac and Cul-de-sac. My
current favorite comic strip syndicated daily in newspapers. Yeah. Totally awesome. Drawn by Richard Thompson.
Mm. Yeah.
What about it?
Are Team Cul-de-sac was the Parkinson's.
Yes. Well, fundraiser. Richard Thompson was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease a couple of years ago, and so Team Cul-de-sac was put together. It's a book that all the proceeds are being donated to Parkinson's research, yes?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Was there a better way to say that, Eden?
No.
Okay. Yeah, it's pretty great. And Richard Thompson's a treasure. He's fantastic.
Yeah. Cul-de-sac is like definitely the best comic strip running in like newspapers today.
Like if you were a Calvin and Hobbes fan and wish that were still being syndicated in papers, Cul-de-sac is kind of the answer to that.
Yeah. And this book is really awesome because it's all different artists from across the spectrum of comics and animation doing their tribute to the characters. So you get to see Richard Thompson's characters interpreted by a lot of really great artists, including Bill Watterson,
who came out of seclusion for the past 15 years to do a piece for this auction. And all the art was auctioned off. And now there's the book, so you can all go out and buy the book.
I'm looking for the book on the site. Is that it right there?
No.
A fanzine for sale. Oh, artist contributing.
The cover is actually the background of the whole site.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's, for those who are listening to the audio after the fact, this is at teamcul-de-sac.blogspot.com. Cool. So you can buy the book to support the project. Well, Caleb, that was awfully good of you to bring that one up into the discussion. Thank you for that. That is an amazing, amazing comic. Anybody else want to come up here? Or I can just pitch it to some closing thoughts on this podcasting stuff and why we do this. So I wanted to do a crass plug for this thing that Dave Roman and I are doing. If you haven't heard about it yet, it's called the Kids Comics Revolution, where Dave pointed out to me that this comics great thing that you do is really cool, but you don't focus enough on just stuff for kids. And I said, that's great, but I don't have time to do something like that myself. And Dave said, I'll help you. And so I said, okay, talk to Dave Roman every week. I can deal with that. And so we started doing this show where, as a matter of fact, we mentioned earlier... now I'm going to have to look up.
Scott Robbins.
Scott Robbins and the Parents' Guide to the Best Kids Comics. Our next episode, at the time of this recording, is an interview with Scott Robbins talking about this book and this project and recommending comics to people, how to find good comics, how to do what they call reader's advisory, and how to identify a comic for a specific audience. So that'll be one to look forward to next. And then we're going to have a Kids Comics Revolution book club where if you want to stop by Dave's table today, you can give him some audio about Zeta the Space Girl that might make it onto the show. We ask kids and adults to give us book talks on their favorite comics for young people. Dave, do you want to speak to that?
I wanted to, with the book club episode specifically, I wanted to create like an audio experience that could sort of be used by teachers and librarians in addition to their own book club. So if you're using this book, you know, with your students, I wanted to sort of create like a downloadable content that they could enjoy. And it's going to have not only people discussing the book, but Ben Hatke, who is the author of Zeta the Space Girl, is actually doing a little radio play with his daughters performing the characters.
I don't think I heard this
yet. No, I just got the audio yesterday.
Oh, cool.
He's actually in Italy right now on vacation with his family, and he just sent this. They recorded it over the dinner table. So it's going to be, you know, something really special and different and, you know, sort of going back to the old, you know, radio experience.
Yeah.
Kids, you know, close your eyes and listen.
That's pretty cool.
So we need somebody to contribute some spacey music, I think.
Yeah.
Anybody is a musician and wants to contribute some.
Well, but even more,
than that, we do want to get more people submitting book talks. We actually have two of the contributors here in the audience, Colby and Jen, have both contributed to episodes of...
Is Colby in here?
Yeah, Colby's right behind you.
Oh,
Mr.
Wow.
Sharp in the house.
Mr. Sharp is right behind me the whole time. I should have... I couldn't see the smile shirt on him, but yeah. Okay, cool. Thanks for coming, Colby.
And that's, you know, like, what was great is that he had some of his class do some contributions, and we've had other kids doing book talks, and that's just sort of like hoping to get the idea that, you know, lots of different voices talking about comics and stuff beyond maybe what people expect to hear. Because I think that one of the best ways to get people excited about reading is to sort of break down the stigma that reading isn't cool. And I think that nothing gets people to believe that things are cool than if their friends and family and everybody around them is all talking about this stuff. The way that, like, you know, a new movie comes out and everybody talks about a new movie, but I want to get people talking about books the way that they talk about that kind of stuff, and sort of just have, you know, voices from all different places, from the teachers to the kids to the librarians to the authors to the book retailers. If we can all sort of like have this as an ongoing conversation, I think it'll sort of help, you know, bring more people into the comics world.
What's really nice that I want to add to this is, like, it really is like an old school interactive thing that's important that we don't lose, because we're bombarded with entertainment all the time. As an instructor, it's like I watch my students who are at a college level who just can't stop being entertained, and they can't stop and do their own stuff because they're always texting, they're always checking out YouTube, they're always checking out a website, they're always doing something else. And I think just to be spoken to is kind of a lame way to entertain people. If there's any way you could draw people in and have them interact and have them be a part of that entertainment, I think the more successful that entertainment is and the more memorable it is and the more it's going to affect, you know, to go on like a grandiose scale, is going to affect lives and actually change lives to be a part of something that you enjoy, as opposed to just watching and having absolutely no part of it. So the interactivity, and going back to the old school interactivity of actually reading books and kind of formulating your own ideas of how the characters act and how they are, and bouncing it off other people who are like, oh, I think this character is kind of like this instead. And, you know, you could have that, just that moment. And that's basically all it is having that moment. And that stuff kind of sticks with you. So I think the way that it's just like you're bombarded with stuff that is just there for you to experience as opposed to be a part of. And I think it's really important for entertainment in order to move forward, to be a lot more interactive and be a lot more, leave a lot up to the participant to interpret and enjoy for themselves in their own way.
Yeah, it's one of the great things that Bill Watterson, who created Calvin and Hobbes, like, was really determined to never have Calvin and Hobbes become a cartoon show, because once you have the cartoon version, the animated version, you've sort of locked in who that character is. Like, now people know what Garfield is supposed to sound like.
Yeah.
And even though over the years a lot of different kids have done the voice of Charlie Brown and the Peanut characters, we all kind of know what Charlie Brown is supposed to look like, supposed to sound like.
They always cast Linus with a kid with a slight lisp,
yeah,
right? Always. It's
because
crazy.
That now is like, that's what Linus sounds,
yeah,
like. But Calvin, we really don't know what,
yeah,
Calvin sounds like. And so for every person who reads that strip, they're bringing their own voice of Calvin and Hobbes,
yeah,
to the table.
Okay, I'm going to rope this around to talk a little bit more about interactivity, because we have interactive-storyteller.com sitting right there in the middle, and also justify why you guys should be sitting in that hot seat at the same time. Because what we're talking about here is we're talking about interactivity, we're talking about getting people excited about something. Do you have to be super smart to interact with something? Do you have to be a great public speaker, or do you have to have like the most insightful comment of all time in order to interact with something that you love?
No. Absolutely not.
What do you mean?
I'm living proof. let's see. It's with that kind of spirit in mind that I used to craft this workshop, Underwater Tomato Ninja, making games in HTML5. And that's about just getting immersed. Some of the most interesting learning, just reflecting on my own learning experiences, some of the things that I've gained the most from is when I was in over my head, but stayed there a little bit longer than I would have been comfortable to start reacting to, and then maybe getting slightly comfortable and seeing what happens. And maybe that's not the best advice, jump in over your head and struggle, but...
Well, we should make it clear. I want to use this as an opportunity to plug the Lean Into Artcast that you and I do together, where one of Rob's credos is it difficult? Is it probably not a good idea? I'll do it. And sink or swim, I'm going to learn something about this experience, right? Or about whatever it is I'm trying to challenge myself with, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I did... it's definitely a theme that comes up on the Lean Into Artcast.
Yeah.
It's one thing to be told something and be presented it, but it's another to find your own experience with it and get some kind of outcome firsthand, and then you can reflect on that. So it's one thing to see someone draw on the screen, but then if you're drawing along with them, or if you're on the same page, literally, like on the same page, not just metaphorically, that's a lot different than just seeing happy trees get painted as cool as, you know.
Yeah, as relaxing as those Bob Ross videos are.
Exactly. Anyway, yeah, that's something that we do a lot is, along those lines is with the Lean Into Artcast, I mean, we often will have topics and things that are that we've reflected on and we're working through, maybe for 5 minutes, maybe for 5 years. But we'll come to the table to talk about it, oftentimes without like a tight agenda, where we just jump in. And so we literally act, react, and learn as we record.
Yeah, and we don't necessarily have an agenda of, we're going to solve this problem by the end of this hour. At the end of this hour, you're going to have this recipe for doing creative things, right? It's more about let's just struggle our way through it and open up that process for other people to listen to and interact with on their own. But also this idea of like the question that I originally posed, where do you have to have like a really great contribution in order to be to interact with something? You know, it's like one of my favorite stories I love to tell is when I was listening to NPR, and they were interviewing some guy who wrote a book about John Locke, and I don't remember the author's name, but he was really, really excited about John Locke. And just listening to this guy talk about it made me kind of go, wow, I need to find out about John Locke now. And even when they wrapped up the interview, they said, thank you for talking with us. And he closed his interview by saying, thank you, and I love talking about John Locke. You know, not the coolest guy that you ever met in your entire life, but he was excited. He was really excited, and his enthusiasm was infectious, and it got me hooked on this idea of, like, American history sounds kind of cool all of a sudden, right? So I'm wondering if you guys could respond to that a little bit, about this idea that... when we talk about the hot seat and everything, it's like, oh, that sounds intimidating. But you don't. What is interesting about interacting with something, with people, is sometimes it's not about being the smartest or the coolest, but being the most excited about something, even if you can't put words to it. Does that make sense? Am I making words into a sentence?
I don't know, but that's my whole career. Yeah, it's like I knew, you know, going into art school. Going from being like, oh, I'm the best artist in high school, yay, to going to art school where, like, suddenly you're one of, you know, 500 amazing artists from all over the world. You know, you need something to sort of rise to the top you either need to be the most talented or you just need to like really be dedicated or really passionate. And I think that people who can bring enthusiasm or passion, you know, you may not, you know, go as far as you can go, but I think you can survive. I think that people, you know, at the end of the day, you just have to care about this stuff, you know, and I think that, you know, it's not unlike being a good parent, you know, like, it's like that thing where it's like, you know, you don't have to read every book about parenting. You just have to show up. You know, you just have to be there for your kids, and you'll probably end up being a pretty good parent at the end of the day. I think
Rob nodded when you said that. I mean, he's one of the parents on the panel, so okay, that's been corroborated.
Yeah, consider that corroborated. Yeah, showing up. You have no chance to succeed if you aren't there, and if you're there and you're choosing to stay in the mix, you're choosing to get in the hot seat and, you know, stay there long enough to make a difference, there you did it.
Most of the workshops I lead, kids come expecting to, like, prove how well they can draw. And I'm like, it's not about drawing. It's not about drawing well. It's not about rendering your characters. It's just about getting an idea down on paper, because comics are really more about storytelling and communicating ideas clearly and showing, you know, a story unfolding in front of you, then making sure every hair is in the right place on every character's head. And I do one-hour workshops where we have to make, you know, a short story, and so there's no time for perfection. And I try to tell myself that when I'm working at home every day, too. Like, it's not about absolute perfection. It's just about getting your work done and doing the best you can in the time you have. Get it done.
We have Audra Farici trying to call for the panel that's coming up. We have a panel coming up in just a moment here. So, and someone had the courage to step into the hot seat.
It's about time.
Mr. Aaron Wolf, good to see you here. Ann Arbor is small enough that we all just know each other. It's like Mayberry.
Much like comics and the industry of comics is the same way.
That's true. Very true.
So I actually wanted to, I was thinking about formulating a question, and I don't have it perfectly formulated, but responding a little bit to what you just said about perfectionism and about the point of comics and telling stories, and I really connected very strongly with Scott McCloud's work on in making comics, and specifically his framework for the different artistic personalities that people have, and he talks about the classicist, and the animist, and the iconoclast, and
his
the
four
formalist.
Tribes, is that what it's
yeah.
like, the four
and
tribes?
And I don't really agree with the tribal element of that, but I think there's something to each of those as sort of a purpose for art, and I'm actually a musician, and I'm thinking about how that applies in that case, but as a teacher, and as people running workshops for kids, I think the question that comes to my mind, and this is partly because I don't think I fit as well. I tend to more towards the formalist. I like Scott McCloud, and I like his stuff compared to just some of the best storytellers, although I like that stuff. And in his perception, which I think is a pretty good model, the formalist is kind of the opposite of the animist, the person who's interested in understanding how the drawing works. And why do we perceive shapes, and we see emotions in shapes? That's weird. And that's a totally different mindset from somebody who's saying, I just want to tell this story and it relates to my life. And they're both part of actual life. And so as teachers, the question that I always have is, how do we make sure to address all of those? Because even though the majority of the students might be more towards animists and might connect with the storytelling thing, if that's the way the workshop goes, then it can, you know, the students who are in the minority who maybe are oriented towards those other personalities don't get as much attention.
No,
go ahead. You're the expert.
There's no way. There's no way to tell. And being there, I teach a very technical way of drawing. It's perspective is what I teach in art college. And I teach the way that Leonardo da Vinci developed, and that's how old school it is. And it's really complicated, and it's really exact, and it you achieve perfect perspective no matter what. And the way I teach, I'm just a hardcore teacher because I believe in developing as an artist all up until you come to me, and then I'm gonna teach a perspective. But at the same time, I'm not the perfect teacher for everyone. And I tell that to my class right away. And I will be, and if you find any one of my students, Chris Houghton was one downstairs, he will tell you, actually it's Chris Houghton's wife was one of my students, not Chris Houghton. Wow. But at one point, every student I've ever had absolutely hated me, wanted me dead, like would key my car, would do anything, because I'm just such a stickler on getting that perspective correct, because that's my job. That's what I'm supposed to do. I think I reach about 50% that where I really, like, they're like, oh, yeah, perspective, I got it. I understand it. I know how important it is. I know how important it is to get the environment and get the figures working in the environment to tell a story of the illustration and everything like that. And I'll touch about half of my class. And I think that's a pretty good ratio, because the other half, I try, and they just can't get it. And I'm just not the right instructor for them. They see things more as abstract, or they see things more graphic. They're better at colors, so they're better painters as opposed to draftsmen. And I just, I try to reach out to them right away if I see that happening, and I'm just going to say that I'm not the, you're in the wrong class, and you need to find the other instructor who's going to teach it this way, or you should go into fine art, or you should be, you know, going to sculpture or anything like that. So it's really hard for any artist, because no one really knows until they do it like crazy. And at the same time, you have people like me telling you, no, it's got to be done this way, now you got to do it this way, now you got to think about it this way. Or you have other people like trying to expand, well, actually more what I try to do is expand them and say, why don't you try it this way and think more three-dimensionally and build up shapes volumetrically and see what happens. And people are usually like, no, thanks, and they walk away. And that's fine. If that's not what you want, that's, I, you know, don't take my advice. Which is, you know, but someone out there would be like, oh, wow, that really, you know, now I can see space, and I could work more toward video games, or I could work in movies where I have to build three-dimensional sets and stuff like that. So, you know, I think everyone has their style and their what they're comfortable with, and no one else is going to fit into that hole. And it's just developing as an artist. And I think Scott McCloud also gave, I think it was the six stages of being an artist, where one's like you draw a cool picture, you show it to your mom, she loves it, you show it to someone else, they hate it, you stop drawing. The next stage is like you show it to someone else, they hate it, you draw it again, you try to get better, you read a book. Someone says it's good, and next time you hear someone say it's bad, you stop doing it. And then the next step is like you go to art school, and it goes so on and so on. That's just the important, it's the journey, I guess, as an artist that we all have to take, that you have to put up with bad advice. You got to be stuck into bad positions. You got to figure out what you hate doing in order to find out what you love doing. And as the artist, it's all up to you guys.
And you're talking sort of at the advanced level, like for mm-hmm. college, mm-hmm. or like you're really thinking about craft and mm-hmm. identity and all that stuff. When, you know, when teaching like younger kids, it's all just kind of like comics, right? And you can kind of do sort of like generic comics classes and sort of see with the way that each kid sort of focuses. And, you know, some kids will sort of be focused on the story. And we've done comics workshops where I'm getting a ring, I'm sorry, where some kids will tell a very straightforward linear story, and then other kids are like having characters break out of the panels and sort of like jump from the beginning of the story, climb around to the end of the story, and all sorts of like really crazy meta things, and you're just like, whoa, you know, like you've just brought your own personality to that, and it's, you know, you're sort of seeing what that type of comics they're interested in making. But I never would have been able to tell that on the surface, if I just said, oh, well, all these kids are interested in comics, but like you said, there's different things that you can sort of bring to it. But I think most of us don't know that growing up, right? Like, you think you kind of, like, that's one of the things that art school kind of does, is kind of like force you to like take a class and then be like, oh my God, this class is killing me. Obviously, perspective is not my thing, which I found out was definitely.
That's what I do.
I will go on record as saying that I cheated my way through the perspective class at school visual arts.
Breaks my heart.
Oh.
I'm going to come for my diploma.
I will add one more thing to kind of follow up. When I was going through college, my instructor said one of the worst things to teach a kid is to draw a stick figure, because then they start symbolizing everything. Mm-hmm. And going back to Scott McCloud, he talks about how the difference between what's actually there and an icon, and he makes that comparison with an eye, where an eye is really an intricate graphic shape, but as you grow up, you start seeing just the word eye, and an eye has to look this certain way. It has to look like a football. There's a ball in the middle. There's a pupil. And all eyes look the same. Eyes don't look anything like that. So going back to the stick figure, one of the worst things to do is teach a child how to draw a stick figure, because all heads must be perfect circles. Bodies are perfectly thin. Shoulder lines must kind of fall somewhere halfway between that stick body and their two stick legs, and maybe a stick foot and three fingers that are sticks as well. And now they're not actually going out and seeing, observing anymore. They're copying a couple of sticks and putting it down on a piece of paper and letting that kind of carry through. And, you know, stick figures are funny for what they are, but at the same time, I think you're pulling out all these great graphic shapes, and, you know, a monster with 3 feet that has a blob for a head and a duck for an eye or something like that, you know, that kids come up with that are totally make sense to them. I think when you have those stories like that, that's when the creativity starts coming in. And for a lot of people, that's when parents are like, there's no one has a duck for an eye. What are you drawing? Stop that. Here's a stick figure. Draw that. That's how people look. And anything that stops creativity, when you start making them think of icons as opposed to like looking at something and making it crazy from what they see, and children see things way differently than like grown-ups see. So why would you inhibit any of that crazy observation at all? So, you know, just encourage kids, parents out there, encourage kids to be as creative and just draw what they see as possible, because that's where all, once you stop them from thinking that way, then all the wonderful stories kind of disappear.
Aaron, you opened up a huge...
I know. I'm sitting here like, why was this at the beginning?
We should have done this at the top.
Like six different directions off of
it. Oh, and I've already got like three different directions I want
to
go with it.
I'm ready to flip the table over.
This is going to turn to the Morton Downey Jr. show, but yeah.
No, I don't. I know that this is... this is the sort of thing somebody could just go and do a dissertation about, but I think as a teacher, what I'm really trying to get at is something like that there has to be some sort of middle ground. So obviously there's the sort of style thing, and there's a certain technique that gets taught, but if we go to a total relativist type of thing that says the goal is to be creative and whatever you do is okay, you know, it sort of creates this dichotomy. I think it's a false dichotomy, and what I'm trying to get at, and I'm trying to phrase this as a teacher, I teach music, but it's the same concept, and it's something about understanding the nature of the way we process things cognitively. So you can show a kid that we put certain lines in a certain way, and it gives you a certain emotional feel, and, you know, those types of facial expression things are not... they don't come from a technique. They come from the way our brains work. And so I think some students are more interested in connecting to the emotion, and it's about the story, and that's the animus type of thing. But some students are just fascinated. Fascinated by the fact that my brain does this, and I'm just wanting to explore that. So, you know, I just try every version of a set of lines or something and see if it looks happier or not to me. And that's fascinating in and of itself, and it's not necessarily the same process as going through and making a story. And I guess I'm talking about sort of how to incorporate that.
So you don't want to learn how to draw the happy cloud, you want to know why that cloud is happy.
Yeah,
something like that.
And you're speaking to something where I've gotten into situations where I feel like I'm almost defending my classes to the parents, where the parents will come in and say, well, what do they have to show for their time today? You know, they don't have a finished comic, but they've got all these scribbles. And I'm going, yes, but these scribbles that this kid did over here was his exploration of trying to capture frustration in line. Like, well, is it like this? Or is there another kind of frustration? Is there like, is this like kind of like a below the surface slowly building frustration and why and how do we defend it? And the language I use in my classrooms is there's no right or wrong answer, but you've got to tell me what you're thinking. You have to defend yourself because I'm going to come at you with six questions about why you did what you did, right? And so you're trying to teach not only celebrate how weird our brains work, but also let's celebrate developing thinking strategies or developing ways of thinking about creativity. And in the interest of time, I have to wrap. You guys got to get back to your tables. But thank you, Aaron Wolf, for that. You want to come on the show sometime? So this is where I'm going to say this show records every other Wednesday at the Ann Arbor District Library at the AADL Netcast Studio. And it is broadcast live at comicsaregreat.tv. It is later collected as an audio and video podcast at comics.aadl.org and at comicsaregreat.com. I want to give a shout out to these terrific people who lended all this great content today to today's discussion. Dave Roman of yaytime.com. And Yay Time on Twitter. Yay Time, just Yay Time anything, and he's there. And then Rob Stenziger of interactive-storyteller.com. And Bob Stenziger on the Twitters. And then Joe Fu of desmondscomic.com. Joe Fu 22 on Twitter. And then
desmondscomic.com.
What?
She plug.
I did Desmond's
comic. I know, I just got in second two times.
You just wanted it, okay.
Desmond'sComic.com.
Yes, the very, very, very shrewd. Then, last but not least, definitely not least, Raina Telgemeier of GoRaina.com. Go Raina on Twitter. The author of Smile. Raina, at her events today, she's giving away pre-pub copies of her upcoming graphic novel Drama, which I have read, folks, and it is a very, very important work that I think more people need to see and be talking about. So you can go visit her table down in the Artist Alley. All these guys are on the third floor of the Ann Arbor District Library. If you've got more questions, more pointed questions that you want to shoot their way, you can reach them down there. Thanks, everybody, for showing up to this thing. Thanks to the Ann Arbor District Library for putting on Kids Read Comics and Comics Are Great every other week. Until next time, everybody, I have been Jersey Drozd of comicsaregreat.com and Jersey on Twitter. Okay, bye.